one that probably is most exciting and most passionate to me is where we're taking each of the longitudinal patients and we're using that to train the underlying models behind ChatGPT. We're using it to train transformer models to follow each of these patients through time and then predict what will happen to these patients. So that's the part that I'm most excited about. And when I see the results from my team, it's pointing to a future that I think is very idealistic and hopefully one that we want to live in.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Alex Merwin from AWS. Today, my colleague Terrence Tan welcomes Eric Chung, the co-founder and co-CEO of Perspection, to the show. Perspection is a healthcare analytics company that converts data into actionable insights by applying machine learning to hundreds of millions of patient histories to predict future health events years in advance. Eric explains how they balance model performance and explainability. However, my favorite part of this conversation is Eric's tactical advice for health tech entrepreneurs on where to focus: data, software, analytics, or go-to-market. Enough from me, let's hear from Terrence and Eric.
Thanks, Eric, for joining us. We got to jump right into it and get you to tell us about Perspection and all you do.
Yeah, no, thanks for having us, Terrence. Like, lovely to be chatting to you again. So I can tell you about Perspection. We are a specialist healthcare data analytics company, and we specialize in longitudinal data analytics for patients. And so really what that means is we get data for a lot of patients, like I'm talking hundreds of millions of patients. We follow each of these patients one by one through time using algorithms to look at how patients are treated. And generally we study each disease. So we'll study, for example, prostate cancer, and see what happens to the patient from the point they're diagnosed, what treatments they take. Did they take drugs or surgery or radiations? What sequence do they take these in? And really, we look through all of that to see what outcome these patients have. And if we can see paths where a patient taking a certain outcome, a certain path of treatments gets to a better outcome than another. And we do that for each disease. We've done that for probably more than 100 diseases now, to create these insights for how patients are being treated for each of these diseases. And then we put that into a online SaaS analytics dashboard that we currently sell to the pharmaceutical industry so that they can understand each of the diseases and how their patients get treated.
Great. Wonderful. And maybe you can find out a little bit about your background and what brought you to your current role as founder at Perspection.
So my background is originally in engineering. I started off as a technical coder, and I have two co-founders. One of my co-founders is also an engineer, and we met each other actually back in uni in undergraduate school, doing something nerdy and programming robots to play soccer. We were AI programmers, and we were in late nights in a lab programming these robots on how to beat other universities at playing soccer. So originally that was my background. I moved into a technology consulting company and worked there before eventually following the path that I wanted to take to start a business. And Perspection is not my first business. So previous businesses were in underground mining and then in sports betting before teaming up with the third co-founder to Perspection. The third co-founder of Perspection is a medical doctor. And so that's really what led us here. So the genesis was originally a medical doctor combined with two engineers that then combined our DNA and our skill sets and our passions and our interests to bring our medical and engineering understanding to the healthcare data analytics field. When we first started, it was pretty new. We were still on the cusp of all the data being digitized and being made available. And so we were being able to pioneer actually what we did in patient-centric intelligence in how do we then take all these patients, look through all the billions of records of claims data, and then pull out all the insights of these patients to illuminate for our customers what happens. So yeah, originally an engineering background, but just over my career, got more into the product side, got more into the commercial side, got more into the data analytics. And really what I do now is a combination of how do we pull all those skills together to make products for our customers that help them use patient data and get insights out of patients' data and drive their business from that and hopefully improve actually patient care and improve outcomes for people.
Very interesting. And how does Prospection use AI to achieve this?
Well, AI is one of the tools that we use. So a lot of what we do now is we have access to massive amounts of data. So we're currently using more than 500 million patients worth of data from around the world. And it's a lot. I like to say 5% of it. So come through our database every month and we see how all these patients get treated. Now, ultimately, what we work on is in the data analytics space, and it orients well to IT folk and BI folk and intelligent folk of how to understand that data. But that's not really where it ends up getting applied, right? If we're looking at healthcare data, then the use of it is not necessarily just for your technical oriented folk. The use of it is, first of all, then to your commercial folk. And so we're using AI in three ways. And they are staged. The first way we're using AI is as an assistant to the dashboards that we produce now. So the dashboards that we produce now give you instant access to all these patients. But with all that data, there's so much you can do with it. And sometimes it's hard to navigate through all that data to be able to get all the patients on the right settings. So the first thing that we did was just to try to make it much more democratized, much more available to people. And if for all those folk familiar with ChatGPT now, like it's now set this new expectation. So that was our first module. We've released it now to our customers, where we have also put in a side assistant to our dashboard where you can interact with it conversationally. So you can ask questions. You can ask, I'm looking for lung cancer patients that are at second line treatment and have already gone through a platinum treatment. And now I want to see those that are positive for EGFR and look at how they're treated. And you can type that in. So just conversationally as text, and it'll all get interpreted. We will pull out those patients and then we will draw out a patient journey for how those patients get treated. So that's our first module. Our first module, we're calling it ProGPT and has just gone live only a couple of months ago. Then our second module, which is going to come out live early this year, is the diagnostic version. So we're calling it ProGPT Plus. And for our pharmaceutical customers, what you can do is you can ask more of your why questions. For pharmaceutical companies, they're balancing actually how do they meet that unmet patient need and then how they grow their business. So you can ask questions as to where is our business growing the most, contracting the most, and why. And the why analysis actually is a simple question, but actually gets right into the data, right into processing these patients to see what are the patient drivers that are driving growth or decline. The third one, Terence, is the one that I'm most interested in. So the one that probably is most exciting and most passionate to me is where we're taking each of the longitudinal patients and we're using that to train the underlying models behind ChatGPT. So we're using it to train transformer models to follow each of these patients through time and then predict what will happen to these patients. So that's the part that I'm most excited about. And when I see the results from a team, it pointing to a future that I think is very idealistic and hopefully one that we want to live in. If you'd like, I can tell you a little bit more about that third step as well, if I can delve into it a little bit further.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful to talk about the generative AI around sort of the model training that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the generative AI model training, the approach that we've taken is, and if I can compare it to something like ChatGPT. So in that underlying model, you can imagine that ChatGPT has been trained on billions and billions of sentences, where the sentences are comprised of vocabulary, be it English or Korean or Japanese, etc. Sentences with lots of words. So we've done something similar, but instead of a sentence, we're looking at a patient journey. And so what I mean by that is each of our sentences is one patient, and we can see all the treatments that patient has taken over time, over their 10-year history. And then the vocabulary, the words that we're using is, instead of it being English or Korean or French, etc., the vocabulary we're using is each of the medical events that patient has had in their patient journey. So we might follow these patients who has prostate cancer, right? So we can see that they had surgery, then they took this drug, then they took this combination, then they moved on to radiation, I moved on to something else. That essentially is one sentence, and each of the treatments that they've had is a word in the vocabulary. They take in 500 million patients, which is essentially 500 million sentences, maybe more than that sentences if you then start to break it down to each disease, and then the vocabulary becomes each of the medical events. And what we're doing is we're training these large language models to be able to read these patient journeys for these patients and then predict out what will happen next for these patients.
So it's more of a predictive type of model?
Exactly. That's what it's doing now. If I keep going with an example from prostate cancer, what the model does is it will read through all these patients, then it's been trained to predict patients that will have their cancer metastasized to their bone, for example. And what we'll do is we'll predict that happening maybe 2 years before it does. And the results that we're getting now, for example, come back with a ROC score 0.9 for that type of prediction. And we've used our foundation model to understand each of the patient journeys, and then we build up this core base of what happens to each of these patients. And then we'll do the fine-tuning event to say we want to fine-tune to find all the patients where the cancer is about to metastasize to their bones. And then what will happen is the predictive model will highlight each of those patients, which we can then follow through time and verify that that really does happen to them, and then build these models to essentially do patient finding, to flag all the patients that we think will have some sort of medical event that we're looking for. And it doesn't have to just be prostate cancer metastases. It can be hospitalization. It could be progression of disease. It could be actually eligibility that you've met a criteria to get onto a new treatment.
Or so, even side effects.
Side effects. Yeah, absolutely. We've done one of those too, where there was a case where we were comparing two countries, and the rate of side effect in one country was 17 times higher than it was in another country. And it was unexpected, and these patients were having quite severe side effects where it led to death. And so then we were taking the patients from those two countries. In all, from the outside, they just seem like they're being treated the same, but trying to explore what were the characteristics of these patients that led to such a difference in side effect profile. And the models then, with that pre-training, is able to pull up that patient set, and then you'd be able to compare the differences. And this is the real case that I'm talking about. So the one that ended up happening there was the largest driver was dosage and weight is what ended up happening. And then it led to the side effect profile. But yeah, that's absolutely the type of power that will come with these predictive models.
Awesome. Well, my understanding, and this is really just a question around the predictive models, right? So my understanding of the encoder-decoder model, which is used in generative AI, because to my mind, it would be really great if we can peek inside the hidden layer or the embedding layer. And even though we might not be able to make sense of the numbers that have been assigned to the various data points or factors, do you think it'd be possible to peek into that just to get a sense of which are the ones that are important? An example would have been, in the case of side effects, would have been possible to peek into the embedding layer at all to take a look to see, hey, is age, weight, and dosing, are these important factors in the way that the model predicts the outcome?
Yeah, very, very, very fair question, because people don't want to be dealing with black boxes, right? So if it predicts out the answer, here's a pool of patients, why? For me to trust it, to do anything about it, you can't just randomly tell me that these are the patients and trust me, it's going to metastasize in the next 2 years, or these are the ones that are going to have a side effect. What's going on? Why is it happening? So far, that is absolutely a common question that we get asked. And actually, when we're doing proofs and validations and things like that, that we want to know for ourselves, like, why does it happen? So can you peek into it, into the encoder-decoder model? It's not necessarily the only way to do it. The way that we're doing it now is we're using multiple different models. So you don't have to use the transformer model to explain the why. Once you found the patient set, you can use another model to say, compare these two patient sets to each other, right? And then draw me the tree as to what is the difference in profile of these two patients. And then you use that to gain the insight as to turn the black box into something that can be explained to say, actually, what were the drivers for these patients?
Fantastic. So black box is perhaps a discovery tool, and then using the other tools in the toolkit to be able to flesh out the causative factors.
Yeah, you don't have to do it all with the one tool. it's absolutely what people would want to know, right, before they can really get into the application of it. But that's the overall suite of how we solving some of these problems.
Great. And perhaps thinking back to prescriptions development, can you share a story of a particularly challenging technical obstacle you had to overcome?
There have been many things that we've had to overcome over time, but often what we like to do in our products and the way that we explore the data is to make everything very fast so that the user is encouraged to interact with it and explore into their unknown unknowns, or to follow the curiosity and understand and be able to search for the patients and see more things. So that up because the overall technical problem was, how do you make it fast to explore hundreds of millions of patients with billions of records behind each of these patients? Because I've seen a lot of other tools where then you start to ask questions of the data or explore these and you just get a big waiting symbol and it just churns for ages before anything comes back. So the technical challenge was always, as we got more data over time, how do you keep everything very interactive and fast and sub-second whilst processing longitudinal patient data? And really, there's multiple things that we had to do, but it was always something top of mind. And one of the key things that we continue to embed in how we look at it is, how do you pull out only the most meaningful events in the patient's timeline for the problem you're trying to solve? A patient might have thousands and thousands of transaction records of all the things that they've done, but from approaching it from the healthcare clinical understanding that you're trying to get, or the commercial business understanding you're trying to get, there will be only certain key events in that patient's timeline that matter more than others. The secret to how we solved it was that contextual knowledge of knowing what matters to our customers and our users, to only pick out those events and have them in essentially a caching framework to be able to make it feel like you're accessing hundreds of millions of patients, but everything is all sub-second response. I think that maybe the analogy is, if you're looking at a image and it's a bitmap of lots and lots of pixels, not all the pixels matter. Only some of the pixels matter in that image. And then you get into image compression and things like that, where you're looking at only these key things matter in the image. It's a little bit like that in a patient's medical timeline as well. Not every event matters. And so a key to it in solving a technical implementation of speed is also that context information of knowing what actually matters.
And perhaps let's look at the other side of things. And could you share with us about a few customers who are currently using the prospection solution and what benefits they are seeing?
So our customers are generally your pharmaceutical companies. We work with pharma companies from in the commercial space. So generally, we start working with them just a little bit before they launch a product. So when they're coming to the end of their clinical trial, then they're making plans for actually how do they take that drug to market. So what is the unmet patient need? Where do they go to find these patients? How big is the market size? What are patients being treated with today for them to do all that planning? Then after that planning, we will also supply them with the data to help get their pricing reimbursement. So be it with government or insurance companies, what is the data that is required to support some of the modeling for how big the market will be? Then in launch, we're hoping to know, where do you go to find the patients? What are the biggest centers? Where are the key opinion leaders? What are these patients being treated with today? And what's your point of difference in getting in? And then beyond that, it's actually then, how do you track what happens to these patients over time? And are you actually growing into the business and meeting the overall patient need? What we're doing is, we're helping our pharmaceutical companies address the care and share leak, is what we talk about. So what is the opportunity in patient care? What is the opportunity in market share? And then we gave it a name. We called it the patient care and share leak. And the information we're giving is trying to address that, so we can address any gaps in patient care and then gaps in market share to help our pharmaceutical companies grow into the market.
So it can really help them to develop their drug launch workflow or the drug launch strategy.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the part in the beginning. And often the launch makes a big difference to what the performance of the drug is over time, right? The better the launch, the better the overall trajectory. So we absolutely do help with that. And one of our customers that used us for a very long time, for like many years whilst they were the president of the company. Every drug that they launched for the 5 years but they were using ours, our product was a global number one. So when they indexed for population and did the launch trajectories in the countries where they were using prescription or their launches were number one launches when they launched, we absolutely do help with that to give them the data that they need to help make data-driven cultural decisions and be smart about actually how they deploy their resources, where they deploy them, where they not require them to optimize their launches.
Great. Wonderful. And what's your ambition for the next few years?
Personally, I love the work that we're doing now. I love the work that we're doing for pharma. But I still absolutely say as a mantra inside the company, how do we help the right patient get the right treatment at the right time? And so I know that ultimately, pharma is not the only healthcare stakeholder that you need to influence with that. And it's not the only stakeholder that cares about all the data that we have and the insights that we have on it. So when we have all this data and the ability to interrogate and pull out these kind of insights, we think it matters not just to pharma, but then also to your payers, to your physicians, and then ultimately to your patient themselves. And so my ambition over the next few years is actually to keep moving through those horizons of healthcare stakeholders to bring this information to them as well, for them to be able to use it. Because overall, I would love that one day if I was in the need as well and turned up to a hospital and had a disease that I needed treatments for, I would want the doctors to be making decisions on data about patients that look like me and be able to optimize their decisions based on what they think is going to work most on me. So that's my ambition for the next few years. And what I'd love to drive with the team is to get our insights and our information and decision support into the hands of more healthcare players.
Right. And do you think there are any major obstacles to realizing that goal?
The obstacles are different for each customer set. Right. I ordered them in a certain way based on the obstacles that I think we would face over time, because it goes from commercial to medical. As you get more and more medical, the obstacles become higher and higher. And what I mean by obstacles is the proof of evidence needs to be higher in order to get like people to be making that decision. Then the hurdle of ethical considerations as well, like start to come in. So it gets beyond just what can be done with the data. It gets into what degree do you have to show that this is the best evidence of what should be done. Then it gets into the degree of just because the data can predict something, should it? Should you tell people about it? And how do you tell people about it? You can't overtake some of the decisions. You have to be able to support and ultimately still give the medical community the ability to decide and incorporate the other factors. So yes, I do see hurdles over time, but that's part of the ambition of what to solve for as we expand.
Wonderful. And perhaps just to round things up, what advice would you give to fellow entrepreneurs looking to drive innovation in the real world evidence space?
For entrepreneurs in the real world evidence space, I think there's a bit of a decision strategically to be made of where do you win? So do you win in the data? Do you win in the software, in the tools? Do you win in the delivery and the analytics? Or do you really win in the go-to-market? Yeah, real-world evidence is still like a broad space, right? And there's a broad space where you have to get all four of those components right. And I do find that different companies have a strategy to win in a different part of that value chain, right? Are you winning in the data, or are you winning the product, or are you winning at the go-to-market? So that's a little bit of a combination. And one that is also particularly relevant to us, and one that I would share to all the entrepreneurs, is as you're innovating into the AI predictive space, what are the payment models? So who will pay for it in the end? Because otherwise, if you can do these technically marvelous things, still, like, you're working in healthcare, like, what is the business model in the end? Like, who do you get to pay for this? Because if someone's not paying for it, then whatever innovations you come up with, however technically groundbreaking they might be, they still may not survive, may not last. So there's a two pieces of feedback that I would give. something that we also evaluate when we're evaluating the ideas that we work on.
Absolutely. And I think most people cannot stress enough the reimbursement model was, in some respects, almost a make or break, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Of care. So I'm super happy to hear that from you. And on that note, thank you so much for taking the time to chat, Eric.
Thank you very much, Terence. It was my pleasure.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.